Penguin Random House Audio presents 10 Steps to Nanette, a Memoir Situation. This is the author, Hannah Gadsby. 4 Mum and Dad. Art is restoration. The idea is to repair the damages that are inflicted in life, to make something that is fragmented, which is what fear and anxiety do to a person, into something whole. Louise Bourgeois. Introduction. Technically, this is my second book, but I wouldn't bother trying to find a copy of my first effort, as it was only published in an edition of one and I've misplaced it. This is no great loss to literature because my first book was a very bad book. Although I shouldn't be too hard on myself, the story does have a bit of charm, considering I was only 7 years old when I penned it. But as a standalone piece of writing, it is terrible. Even the title is bad. How Sif and Soften Became Friendly with a Dragon, Part 1. I put a spoiler in the title. What a fool. Why would you bother reading a book when you already know that no matter how dramatic the narrative twists and turns might be, Sif and Soften and the Dragon will eventually end up on pretty good terms? Clearly, I had an epic series in mind when I added Part 1 to the title, but sadly I never got round to writing the second instalment. Even so, one would assume I'd have left the reader with a cliffhanger so as to whet their appetite for Part 2. But no, Part 1 ends with Sif and Soften and his new dragon pal waving a happy goodbye from the pleasant shores of Holiday Island. No wonder I never got round to writing the sequel. I couldn't even think of a name for an island beyond the singular purpose I'd invented the island for. I was clearly all out of ideas. I suppose you might want to read the book just to find out who this Sif and Soften character is, but here again, you'll find my writing falls short, because apparently I didn't think it was necessary to offer a description of the central character of my novella. My accompanying drawings could have been enlightening, but again, ambiguity reigns. Sif and Soften begins his epic journey as a carefully executed, albeit childishly rendered, little red goat. But by the time he becomes friendly with the dragon, he is just a lazy tangle of orange squiggles because I'd grown bored of drawing, and also, presumably, I'd lost the red pencil. Fortunately, I do have some insider knowledge on this matter, and I can report that Sif and Soften was neither a red goat nor an orange squiggle. He was the imaginary friend of my older brother Hamish, and according to him, Sif and Soften was a tiny footballer who lived in the toilet with his best friend Kinnawin. When the one copy of my very bad book found its way back to me recently, I was inundated with a cluster of memories that I didn't even know I had. I'm not talking about repressed memories. They didn't return with a shocking jolt. They just quietly worked their way to the front of my thought queue as if they'd never left. The cover, two pieces of red cardboard bound by masking tape, had faded and softened over time, but my poorly planned title still looked as if it had only been poorly executed just yesterday. As I held it in my hands, I recalled how angry 7-year-old me had become the moment I realized that I didn't have enough space for the last 6 words of the title, and I felt the heat of my self-admonishment rise as sharp as if 35 years had not passed. Flipping to the back page, I saw the note of praise written by the vice principal next to a reward sticker of the Pink Panther, curving himself around a giant pen with the words, "Well done," spilling from its point. I remembered how lovingly I'd traced around the sticker with my finger almost bursting with pride. I also recalled that I had felt a little bit annoyed that it was only the vice principal, and how I'd wondered what the hell I had to do to get the principal's attention. I could also remember how my teacher had insisted she write my story out for me because I was too young to have my pen license, and how she had then insisted that I read my story to the whole class, and how everyone in my whole class had hated both me and my book. I don't blame them. It was, after all, a very bad book. The return of my literary debut stirred up memories that went well beyond the object itself and included the emotional roller coaster that had precipitated my urge to put pen to paper. It had all begun with my obsession with Hamish's imaginary friends and the mounting distress I felt because they didn't want to be my friends too. I hadn't known what imaginary meant and had just assumed that Hamish had cool friends who refused to talk to me, which made for many toilet time tears. I also remembered how, after it was explained to me that Hamish's friends lived inside his head, I had asked if I was allowed to imagine Siff and Soffin too. And when Hamish said no, I'd burst into tears again. And this prompted Hamish to offer me the thoroughly unacceptable compromise of the imagined friendship of Kinnawin. I did not accept, because I only really wanted Siff and Soffin, who I'd imagine was a little red goat, and had managed to convince myself that sometimes I could hear him clip-clopping on the plumbing. I did not care for Kinnawin. I hardly knew her. I didn't even know what she looked like. I also remembered how, at one point, I'd attempted to conjure my own imaginary friends and began galloping about on my horse, Sergeant, while chatting to my good friend, Mr. Dog, who was a dog I'd obviously named in the tradition of Holiday Island. It was not a winning moment, as I could only recall how profoundly foolish I'd felt, because I knew my friends were not real. And to make matters worse, I had imagined them to be incredibly large chaps, which meant I still didn't have any friends to talk to in the toilet. I don't know what to call my next move, as I don't think it is possible to kill beings that do not exist. So let's just say I ghosted Sergeant and Mr. Dog. Violently. It felt humane at the time, but really I just wanted them out of the way so I could try my luck with Siff and Soffin again. After my needless imaginary horse and dog ritual sacrifice, Hamish told me I was too late. His friends were gone. When I pressed him for their whereabouts, he very somberly reported that they were in heaven, helping God. Throughout my childhood and well into adulthood, I worshipped Hamish, and it often felt, painfully so, that he deliberately abused the power he had over me. But when I remember episodes like this, I know that simply couldn't be true of a small boy who not only assumed that God would need the help of tiny football players, but who also felt such levels of loneliness that he had to invent friends he could talk to and poo on. He clearly had issues of his own. Despite all these memories returning with such wonderful clarity, the story itself failed to ring a single bell in my head. It was so unfamiliar, in fact, that the ending would have come as a complete surprise had I not spoilt it with the title. Another striking element of the very bad book that I don't recall authoring was the high level of violence, bloodthirst, and death it contained, not to mention how matter-of-factly 7-year-old me described the guts and gore of it all. I should have been given counselling, not a Pink Panther sticker. Yet despite the foreign storyline with all its beheadings, torture, and other blood-filled whatnot, there is still a familiarity to the story, because part one essentially reads like a thinly veiled autobiography. Siff and Soffin hated dresses, had dreams about being a dog, and was a big fan of food. But the most astonishing thing about my very bad book is that it reads like a blueprint for my future, a map, if you will, for the way that adult Hannah emerged from that strange and childish little author. Much like my own life, Siff and Soffin's journey was defined by accidents, isolation, and exile. And his survival, as much as his perils, were, like mine, brought about by an abundance of misplaced trust and a passive acceptance of circumstance, no matter how grim. 10 Steps to Nanette, which I guess could be dubbed a very delayed part two, is more of a traditional memoir. It begins with my birth and ends with a publishing deadline. It has two stories to tell. One is about my rather odd start to life, and the other is about my rather odd decision to end my life in comedy. I have tried to approach this book with as much honesty as possible. However, what follows is a thinly veiled fantasy. I've chosen a bit of fantasy over fact in a few places because some of my stories are not entirely mine. I've changed some names and even merged people, times and places because I don't...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?